Thank you, Larry, so much. So good to see each and every one of you. We've got so many folks visiting with us today, and we are honored that you are here, that you chose to brave the weather. Some of you even had to break out your ski boats to get here, and we're thankful that you made it and are grateful to be together, be able to worship together. I want to just compliment a few things as we get started this morning. Man, last week we had a huge group of our empty nesters. If you are not yet a part of this group, about once a month, they are going to eat together in the back. These are our folks that the kids have kind of grown up and they've flown off and they left the nest. And they may have come back and they may have left again. You know how that goes. But the reality is we're thankful for this group, and they're just a tremendous group, and we love what they do. Already been mentioned about London's baptism, and what a joy that was last Sunday, and we're so thankful for that good family. You know, another thing, Sunday night, I don't know if y'all were here, and if you missed this, Griffin led our prayer at the end of the service. And I'm going to tell you, I love the heart of our kids. Two things. One was something Griffin said over and over that I'd never heard quite the same in a prayer before. And as he was praying, he just said, "And God, I love you." And he would pray a little bit more, and he said, "And God, I love you." And I thought to myself, what more pure, what more precious a picture of the heart of a child of God than just saying, "God, I love you." And it needs to be more and more part of my prayer and my thought and my heart as I go to the Lord. But then this is kind of, I got there a little bit late, but as I was walking across to say something, I looked right over here in this section, and there was Griffin, and he was being greeted by his buddies, and they were all saying, "Man, good job. Good job on your prayer. Man, thank you for leading us in prayer." And I thought, that is, and this cluster of kids, they were just kind of lined up to say they're proud of him. You know, I like finding good smiles. And thank you to the Richter family for this. Little Drew, a smiling beau, not so much, but hey, Drew, that was good stuff right there. And then every once in a while, a mom will throw something out, and I'll find another smile that I really think's cute. And this one's kind of cute. The bow ties, I want you to bring them back, guys, okay? But I thought that was nice. And then a little Concy came up, and these glasses are not real glasses, but they're just fashionable glasses, okay? And I thought they were pretty precious, and so I'll share that with you. We need a smile as we get started. Jesus said, "Follow me and I will make you fishers of men." We've been talking about what it means to be a disciple, what it means for us to follow Jesus. And I love the word that kind of is there, and I must have lost a slide in there. It happens. There were several that disappeared. We talked about the idea of what it means to be a disciple, to be a pupil of another, to be one who is a follower, to be one who is a learner of behaviors and of teachings and of things. And I really like this, as I heard it this week, to be an apprentice of someone. And I thought about that because, you know, when you're going into certain professions, whether it's an electrician or a plumber, you spend time with a professional, right? And you become their apprentice, and you learn how to do by walking alongside and by doing the things that they're doing and by them explaining to you the things that they're doing. And eventually, after so many hours as an apprentice, then you go on and you are now an electrician or you are a plumber. But as I heard someone describe being a disciple of Jesus, he said it was like this. It's like being an apprentice who never graduates. It's something that we are constantly looking at, and we're striving to become more and more. And we've got to be looking at it, because what we look at and what we see is what ends up becoming who we are. I got a chance to watch a little football with this guy. You think he's been watching how to celebrate and watch football with his dad? I do. He knew right where to go. And then he got up in his dad's lap and he even got a ball cap on. And I thought, you know, when we're kids, we watch and we learn. We even learned, as he said, I'm going to go relax. And he got in his chair and he kicked it back another notch. You know, the reality is what he sees is what he kind of becomes. What he watches is what he becomes. As we start today, I want you to think about a passage with me as we look just in a minute about what it means to be a disciple. But it kind of is something that is backwards because it doesn't really make sense to us, because some of the things we see they're not that clear. And I love the way the prophet Isaiah put it in Isaiah 55, 8 and 9. This is a passage that has been one of my favorites since I was way young. Because sometimes we don't always understand why things happen in life, why things go the way that they go. And sometimes we just have to trust. And I love the thoughts here. When the Lord says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways." And I need to be reminded of that Jesus' way is a better way. It doesn't always make sense to me that way, but I know it's a better way because His ways are higher than my ways. His ways are purer than my ways. His ways are he's seen from an entirely different perspective than we see. I want you to hear one of the last words out of the Gospel of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 10. We've spent some time in this over the last 3 weeks looking at what it means to be a disciple. In Matthew chapter 10, we looked at the fact that it says a disciple is not above his teacher, and we talked about that a disciple, it's important that he is humble, that he recognizes that there is a place in hierarchy for me in relation to Jesus, that we look back to the Great Commission and he says, all authority is given to Jesus, not to me, that I respect him and I place him in the position of directing my life. Then we looked last week at the idea that said, it is enough. And we talked about how many times do we spend searching and grabbing and trying to pursue the enough of life, whether it's being on enough all-star teams or being promoted enough or making enough or traveling enough. And we have all of this enough that we search out for. And Jesus, at the heart of his message, says about discipleship, it is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher. You know, when I looked at Kaylin the other night and I saw him climb up in your lap, Mark, with that hat on, I thought to myself about that passage. It is enough that nothing in his life, nothing else matters. That's all that matters. It's enough for me to be able to look like my dad and hang out watching the game like my dad and to climb up in my dad's lap. It's enough. And Jesus calls us to an enough life, a full life in Him. And so as we looked at that, a disciple is going to be humble, and a disciple finds life in the fact that he goes, hey, I just want to be like you. I want to be like Jesus. That's the heartbeat of my faith. I want to be like Him. Then as we approach the end of this chapter, in Matthew chapter 10, in verse 42, the Scripture says this, "And whoever gives one of these little ones even a cup of cold water because he is a disciple, truly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward." You see, in this passage, we find out that Jesus has some insight for us that he wants us to capture. And the insight is this, that a disciple is willing to see people like Jesus, and he's willing to serve people like Jesus. A disciple is willing to see and serve like his master. Sometimes when we look at the projects that we get into, and sometimes I even think about just last month when Jackson, Mississippi underwent such a tragedy with their flooding and whatnot. And we packed up there was water that was packaged and sent on pallets and pallets and pallets. Sometimes I think we look at projects and needs, and we see these huge things that we ought to be doing, and those are good things. We see, like, a dear friend of mine, he runs and he wrote me, he said, in our community, because of the Christian faith, those who own the wells in India where we live do not allow Christians to drink from their wells. Would you help me put a well in the front of the church here so that we can share it with anyone who needs water in our community? And I'm thinking, man, what a powerful way to do that, to help drill wells in places, just like many, many Healing Hands and other organizations help do for people around the world. And we think of these great projects and these huge things that we can do as disciples trying to help others. And then in my mind, I think, Jesus doesn't say, if you do this huge, amazing, great thing. Jesus says, if you're willing just to give a cup of cold water because you're my disciple, just a cup. See, I think sometimes we sell ourselves short as we think about what we can do for others as disciples of Jesus, because we look and we go, hey, this is what I'm able to do. I just can't do that much. Maybe I'm not that talented. Maybe I'm not that resourceful. Maybe I don't have this great amount of wealth to fund this or that. And I have this in my mind. What can I do? And I'm so thankful that Jesus made this statement about what it means to be a disciple. Because it's not so much about what I can do, but it's about what He can do through whatever I'm doing. It's about what He's planning on doing as you give that cup of cold water. It's about His work in the life of someone else that is in need, that they then say, well, why would you do that? What is it about your life that is different? What motivated you to do that? Why are you here? I can remember when Hurricane Katrina hit South Mississippi, and that was the question that I heard over and over and over again. Why are you here? Why would you do this? And the reality was, it was because I saw the need, and I wanted to be a part of helping someone that was in need. You see, sometimes when we look at things, we see things and we see the word insignificant. Maybe it's the cup. We think, man, that's just an insignificant thing. Maybe you look at it and you see not just the act of service that's happening, the giving of a cup of cold water, which I need, by the way, right now. Excuse me. Maybe it's the insignificance of the individual. Not because they're insignificant, but because in our minds we've thought of them as insignificant. Think about it with me for a second. If you look at this passage, it says, whoever gives a cup of cold water to who? To one of these little ones. I think a lot of times as we look at our world around us, there are people that we might classify, rightly or wrongly, with that word insignificant. There are people that, because of the perception that has happened, that the perception of them is seen rather than the person themselves. And as I think about Jesus telling this, here He's pointing out children. And if you remember, these disciples that were with Him had been some of the ones that had, like, shoo the kids away. Hey, get them out of here. We're doing some important work. Get these kids away from Him. He's got to take care of some serious matters. And Jesus goes, no, let the little children come to me. Jesus turns them upside down in thinking and saying, hey, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. These are important children. If you can get it right here at this stage of life, it will entirely change the direction and trajectory of the individual that you will become. They're not the least of these. These are huge in my heart. You see, Jesus looks at what so many times we look at as insignificant, and Jesus goes, no, they're very significant. Whether it's the children Maybe perhaps it's someone with a handicap, an impairment, a difficulty. I think about the people that Jesus came in contact with that the world had just kind of thrown change at on the side of the road. The lame man, the blind, the woman who had been bleeding for years, the gentleman that came down into the middle of his teaching that others probably wanted to hush and run out of the room. Why are you tearing up the building? Why are you doing this thing? And these guys that were up top just wanted to get their friend close enough to Jesus. And I think about this idea that says, if we're going to be disciples, we have to see people in different ways than the world perceives them. We don't just see someone who is physically sick. We see someone who is whose heart is hurting because of illness. We see the shut-ins. We see people in homes for the aging. We see people that society has outcast. I think of the man in that was possessed with the demons in Luke chapter 8 that was there and he had been placed in a cemetery, even chained down in order to try to keep him there. He was outcast. And I wonder in my mind, as Jesus came to him and as Jesus blessed him and ministered to him and cared for him, I wonder who is that in our society? Who in our world, in our community, would fall into a mindset that says that they've just been outcast by society? Perhaps they're like the lepers. I share this with you because he's a dear friend. His name is Ricky Goodham. Ricky's a minister in India. Does some amazing work, but this is an occasion where he's visiting with some folks that they're part of a leper's colony. And you can't see that one dear lady's hand as she's got her mask. She's lost most all of her fingers to the disease. Most people are afraid to even be there, but Ricky is willing to go and he's willing to share. He brings gifts of food and he helps in different ways. And perhaps my favorite part of this is he doesn't just go by himself. He understands that being a disciple is not just about serving the least of these. He also takes his 13-year-old son who goes with him as well. You see, it's not just about what we say, it's about what we model in front of our kids. I think about this, and I wonder who are those that are the lepers among our society and our culture? Who are those that nobody wants anybody anything to do with, that Jesus is just crying and hoping and praying that, no, show them my love. Show them my heart for them, that I care for them, even in the midst of whatever it is that they have going on, whatever it is that is their struggle. I think in our culture, there are many things that you could look at and you could say, I think that would probably classify as those who would be among the outcast, especially as it relates to people of faith. I think about, in our current culture, I think about those who were like Jesus in the early stages of his life. Do you remember when Herod was trying to kill Jesus? What happened to Jesus? His father took his mother and young Jesus and they migrated to another country and they went and they lived in Egypt for a period of time until it was safe for them to go back to their own homeland. And I wonder if in Jesus' heart for people that have come to our country that are looking for safety and trying to escape terrible situations, all political things aside, I think, how would Jesus want the church reaching out and blessing and helping those folks? We're not in the place of the law, and we're not in the place of political power. We are followers of Jesus. How does Jesus want us to respond? How does Jesus want us to care for others? I think about people in their lives as they're confused and they're struggling with matters of the heart, and they're trying to decide and decipher who they are in identity. sometimes in sexuality, sometimes in attractions and things that they face. And they don't even know Jesus yet, but they're trying to figure out who these people that follow Jesus are. How do they treat us? Not the sin that is in our lives, but just how do they treat us as people? And I see Jesus saying, whoever would give just a cup of cold water, whoever would do the most seemingly insignificant thing for them, because he's my disciple, is doing something great. Showing kindness, showing the love of Jesus is what we as his disciples are called to do. A summer ago, I was in Palenque, Mexico, and I had an occasion to work with a future ministers camp, and there in the camp was one of our brothers. And Felipe had been there for a little over 5 or 6 years, and he began to tell me a story. I said, Felipe, how'd you become a Christian? And he said, are you familiar with the state of Mississippi? And I smiled. I said, I was born in the state of Mississippi. You know, we're last in most everything. You know, I know Mississippi, you know. He said, I had come across the border about 6 years ago to try to find work to help support my family. And I was living in Pontotoc, Mississippi, across in an apartment, and I was working 5-6 days a week. And he said, one Sunday I looked out the front doors, and there across the street was the Pontotoc Church of Christ. And I said to my friends, I'm going to church this morning. He said, I walked across the street, and it was the first time I had ever visited, and it was the first time I had ever been among these people that were called Christians only, or those that are disciples of Jesus, those that are trying to restore this idea of just being the church. He said, I began to study, and I began to learn, I began to grow. He said, and it became heavy upon my heart. I obeyed the gospel, and just like we saw London do, he was baptized into Christ here in a foreign country, learning and speaking a language that was not even his own, and he was taught the gospel because somebody treated him with kindness. And they offered not just a cup of cold water, they offered him the good news. He would go back to his own country, and he would become a gospel preacher. And he would start a church in his hometown. And that church is now about 100 strong. And he was the guy that was hosting young men from all over the region of Mexico where he lived, training them and helping them to be preachers one day. And I just wonder, what would it have been different if those folks that were in that church when he visited the first time had treated him in a different way, had not welcomed, had not offered or extended to him an invitation to dinner, had not reached out and said, would you like to know more about the Bible? If they had not treated him like he was very significant to the heart of God. There's a book by Dane Ortlund, and it's called Gentle and Lowly. And I love this phrase. It says, Jesus walked the earth, rehumanizing the dehumanized and cleansing the unclean. Why? Because his heart refused to let him sleep in. Sadness confronted him in every town. So wherever he went, wherever he was confronted with pain and longing, he spread the good contagion of his cleansing mercy. Christ is love covered in flesh. Picture it. Pull back the flesh off of the Terminator and you find a machine. Pull back the flesh on Christ and you find love. If compassion clothed itself in a human body and went walking around on this earth, what would it look like? And then he says, we don't have to wonder. It's Jesus. And you know what happens when Jesus' people begin walking like Jesus and talking like Jesus and treating others like Jesus? The world begins to see the compassion and the heart of our Savior as it approaches those who are around them. And it's not insignificant. And they're not insignificant people. And they're not insignificant acts of kindness. They're very significant. So significant, Jesus, in his closing of his ministry, one of the last teachings before the plot to kill Jesus unveiled, you remember Jesus giving a picture of the end, the judgment? And listen to these things that we probably would kind of classify as insignificant. Verse 31, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all of his angels with him, then he will sit on all his glorious throne, and behold him, all will be gathered of all the nations, and he will separate one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on his left. And then the king will say to those who are on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And then the king will answer to them, truly I say to you, as you did it for one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it for me. And then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into eternal fire prepared for you for the devil, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. And I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. And I was naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you didn't visit me. And then they will answer saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and not minister to you? And he will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. You see, these things are not insignificant matters. These people are not insignificant people. They are people that have an eternal soul. So much so and so important is it that we be his disciples, loving and caring for him, that it makes an eternal difference in our lives as well, according to our master, our teacher, Jesus. If there's any way we can minister or bless you today, if there's a way that you are seeking in your life and want direction in helping you to follow Jesus, if there is a struggle that you have, if there is a heartache that you want someone to walk alongside with you and help you bear, we're here for that, and we want to encourage you as we stand together and as we sing.